The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel Wilhelm, Menahal at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Menachos Daf Choftes Omed Aleph, the beginning of the famous 10 blots, which we call, known as the Sugyas of Stam, the main headquarters for the Halachas of Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzas. The Gemara starts out with the quote from the Mishnah, Parshia Shtei Parshia Sheba Mezuzah Ma'akva Yizoy Yizoy Va'afilu Ksav Echod Ma'akvon. The two Parshias of the Mezuzah are inextricable from each other, meaning to say that many times you'll have a mitzvah where you're obligated, even if you're obligated to do the entire mitzvah, the larger mitzvah, but each component of the mitzvah, each part of the mitzvah, is done on its own, is possible to be accomplished on its own, and in this case of mezuzah, it isn't the case in the specific mitzvah of mezuzah, and both you need both parshas. If you did one parsha, you weren't able to do the other parasha for whatever reason. It's as if you haven't done anything, and it's meaningless to put that mezuzah up or so. And the Gemara says, and the Mishnah says, "Vafilu ksav echad ma'akvan." Even one ksav is ma'akvan. What does it mean, "Vafilu ksav echad ma'akvan"? That's the subject of our Gemara. And the Gemara says, "Vafilu ksav echad ma'akvan." In fact, the Gemara pshita that's obvious. So why would the simple meaning wouldn't warrant a halacha in the Mishnah? The Rashi says, "Why is it pshita? What do we mean?" And Rashi says, "Because the ois achas ma'akvason dechsiv chsavtem ksivatama." It's obvious that one ois is integral, and it's a mandatory component of the entire mitzvah. So that obviously wouldn't be the interpretation of the Mishnah. So the Gemara proceeds to say, "I'm Rabbi Yehuda Marav." Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, "Lenitzchre lo kutza shal yod." It's referring to this is necessary to reference the halacha of kutza shal yod. And we'll see in a minute what that means. That you must have there's a requirement of kutza shal yod. Kutza shal yod, the little translation would be the point of the yod, the protrusion of the yod, or the stick of the yod. For the Gemara, he asks, "Hanami pshita." This also cannot be accepted because it's too simple. It's something that would not be wouldn't be part of the meaning of the Mishnah. The final conclusion is it must be referring to a more complex halacha, which is also said in the name of Yehuda Marav. Any ois which is not surrounded by gvil, by a which doesn't retain its own gvil environment, so to speak, which I'm going to be intentionally ambiguous over here, because this is a very, very complex halach on its own, and it's not the focus of this particular shiur. But the simple idea is that each ois has to be standing on its own. It can't. It needs its own cloth around it. It can't be intertwined with another ois. And that's the Gemara says that the Gemara is satisfied with that interpretation of the Mishnah, that v'afilu ksav echad ma'akvan, not only is one parsha ma'akvan the other parsha. Even this small detail of kolay shein gvil mukaf l'me'abiru chasel is also included in the requirement of this halacha. Now, the Gemara went through three stages. The Gemara first understood the simple meaning, which was rejected because it's too simple. It's pshita, and then the Gemara offered another interpretation, which Gemara further rejected on the basis of Hanami Pshita, that's also Pashit. But we have to understand that even though ultimately it'll be too simple to translate into the Mishnah, but it's going to have to be a little more complex than the first than the first possibility. And then the Gemara proceeds to say the third one again. We're not going to get into that, but that's obviously a little more complex, and it doesn't have to do with a simple requirement, but there's an additional condition of gvil mukaflam habet ochusel, that the gvil must surround the ice from all sides. So there's a machlekes famous Rashi machlekes Rashi Tosfos. Actually, what's more famous is the halacha, which evolves from this machlekes, which we call the Kutz Rabbeinu Tam. The Kutz Rabbeinu Tam, if anyone's looked, paid attention to the Ksav in the Sefer Torah, you could notice that every Yud has, at least for the Ashkenazim, for the Sfarim, for the most part, every Yud on its left side will have a little kites, a small. It will have a small spike, or we call it a kites, similar to what we know as a tag, the crowns, the so-called crowns in the Sefer Torah, the tagim, which are lines, points, or sticks, which protrude from the ice. And if you look closely again under the left side of the yud on the bottom side, there is that small protrusion, and where it's missing, it would invalidate that yud and consequently invalidate the entire mitzvah, whether it be the Sefer Torah or Tefillin and Mezuzos, Chas V'Shalom. There are many, many stories of such instances where someone opens his parshias after many years, or the tefillin or mezuzahs, only to find that there's a problem. Many times it's a omission of such a small detail. So again, let's just backtrack. We're going to review, according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, what the respective stages of the Gemara are. The Gemara says, according to Rashi, Pshita, Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Eloi Nitzchel, Lekshut Kutz Shriyot. So that's Pashat. Why? If you omitted the entire ice, so obviously that wouldn't be accepted. So Rashi says, the Nitzchel, Lekutz Shriyot is referring to not the left side, which we just explained, but the right side, where we know every Yud has a Rosh, the larger portion, and then to the right, there extends a sort of leg, a regal, a kutz, according to Rashi, and that is essentially what makes the yud into a yud. If not, it would just be a mere block. To that, Rabbeinu Tam asks a question, the kasha, pirsh b'kuntras regal yamani. The Rashi explains that it's referring to the right side, the extension of the leg of the yud to the right down. The kasha dopshita deinza ois. This is obvious. The Gemara wouldn't offer this as a plausible explanation. You know, the Gemara wouldn't attempt to present this as a larger chiddush, a more complex halacha than the omission of an ice, because in essence, as if you did nothing, and just a mere block would be nothing. So Rabbeinu Tam says that it's obviously referring to a more detailed, more intricate piece. Mufarash Rabbeinu Tam, who roshe kafuf. This is a reference to what we see later on Amud Beis. The ois yud is depicted as Rosh Hakafuf, his head, so to speak, is bent over, is bent down. And the Gemara explains why. The Gemara says that the shapes and of the oisius have very deep meanings on a graphical, metaphoric representation to the fundamentals, the yesodus of emuna, or the mazer, the mabos, charva einish, and many other fundamental concepts in emuna and in anogas aboyei. So the Gemara says over there, the Gemara that says Rosh HaKafuf, that there is a slight bend of the head on the left side, that is what is in fact referred to by the Gemara. The Gemara attempts to propose that that would be the meaning of Afil Ksavech Ma'akfar. Now on that, the Gemara rejects it and says, Vanami Pshita. This is also simple. It's simple. If that's what's required, when obviously you need it. Now that's interesting. What's interesting to observe is that both according to Rashi, which we'll get to in a minute, but especially according to Rabbeinu Tam, that the Gemara rejects this small detail in the Ois, which is mentioned in passing in the Gemara, which it shouldn't say in passing, but it's actually mentioned in the context of an agadita, so to speak, of a Gemara which is not presented as do this, do that, a halacha de Gemara, a shmeitzah, but rather an agadita, which is, of course, we know that there's not a place to elaborate on the nature of agadas, but there's a small detail mentioned in that Gemara, and the Gemara says obviously the Mishnah wouldn't be referring to that because that's obvious. Everyone knows that would be ma'akev, and that would invalidate the entire mitzvah. The Rabbi Natan goes further and he says, "V'im toima." According to what I'm saying, "Taminim ba'godes chelik v'nayi kosvim," that a child is capable of writing it. "Dainu yud shem hishlach na evin b'kiv v'asar roishem oisay yud." This would support Rashi's position because Rabbi Natan asks on himself that the Gemara in Sanhedrin indicates that a yud is a very simple. A very simple structure. Now you cause me anyone. It's a mere throw. You throw something at the wall. All you're going to make is you strike. When it'll strike the wall, it's going to make a mark. Now that mark can't have. That's a one dimensional mark. It's going to go in one way. It's not going to have two dimensions. That unless you throw a curveball. But that would seem to support what Rashi is saying, that a block in itself is rightfully called a yud. Now, Rabbi Natan says, "V'shlamu the kain yud kama v'lo yud mamish." In that Gemara, the purpose of that Gemara is not to detail or to speak about the Isis. I was just trying to show us, a way of showing us what that symbol was. So it's Kain Yud, but of course, whenever you're going to refer to a Yud, and we need that to have some meaning to it, you can't call a simple block, a line, a Yud without the regel. And if that's the case, it's obviously not what the Gemara would propose at this stage, which would be a little more complex than the omission of a letter itself. Now, to understand Rashi's position, you could understand it in one of two ways. One way is a simple way, according to what we just saw in Rabbeinu Tam, where the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to acknowledge the marking, the block, the simple block, a one-dimensional, or striking a wall, as a yud reference, as depicting some sort of a yud, and maybe according to Rashi, that might also have been acceptable. And if that's the case, then we might be able to say in certain cases that, and of course this gets a little deep into the intricacies of ksivas, tefillin mezuzos, ksidron, what you're allowed to fix over, what you're not allowed to fix over. But perhaps this would tell us that Rashi had accepted some sort of an allowance with the regal of the yud and acknowledging just the mere shape of the block. Although we know that it is ma'akev. At the end of the day, it is ma'akev. It's not going. It's going to stand in the way. It's not going to be accepted. But in some instances, we could look at it like there is a representation of a yud. Again, I'm not going to get into why it sounds a little funny. But there is there are ramifications to that. That's one way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it is that not that Rashi is acknowledging a halachically accepted way of writing a yud, but rather the concept that's shown in this Gemara is the idea that oisius are not a convention, and even so, not just a simple convention of anyone, but even a convention of the Jewish nation. If we were to decide that that this is the way the yud looks today, and a classic example of this this idea would be today we write a chof and a beis on top in the same fashion where the beis by us is rounded. La halacha, a beis is not allowed to be rounded on the top right-hand side. Of course, the bottom right-hand side, the Mishnah Berurah says, is the primary area where we're going to have the distinction between the chof and the beis, but also the top of the beis must be, at least according to Ashkenazim, must be round, must be squared as well, and where it's not, it could present a serious halacha problem. In many other cases, many other oisius are like that also, and of course we have the classic ches, where if you ask a child to look in the Sefer Torah, you point to a ches. If someone, a young child is just beginning to learn the oisius, we'll read that as two zions, and again, we know that by us that's an accepted ches. So there's obviously we have certain ways that the oisius have come into, they're accepted, they're seen, viewed, and read in a certain with deviation from what's written in the Sefer Torah. Now, perhaps one might say that there's definitely reason to for every nuance that you find in Ksiva Stam. But perhaps something which is legible to most people, many people, universally accepted, perhaps that would pass for an ois. And although I might not be mekayim the mitzvah optimally behidur, but it could be that it would get by for the mitzvah. And perhaps that's what's said here in the Gemara, that there is a validation of a yud, which without a regal, that there's some sort of, but the fact is that if you make that yud to anyone, you'll put it into a word together with other letters, everyone's going to read it for a yud today, and that's, in fact, the way we write it in a cursive alphabet. So that could be the idea which is said by Rashi according in this Gemara, and quote Rabbi Natam, it seems to say a more detailed, more intricate halacha, which the Gemara rejects as being too simple to be incorporated, to be told by the Mishnah, which is very interesting because the Mishnah just said a sentence before shtei parashis shemzuzim ha'akva. So the two parashis ones, they're dependent on one another. And they all of a sudden were proceeding to say, surely, if it's two parashiyos, then obviously it means even one letter. And that's very strange in itself. But furthermore, is what Rashi brings, Ksavtim Ksivatama, the Makor for it, because it says Ksivatama. Well, obviously, if it says Ksivatama, that's a drasha. I mean, everyone knows that drasha, so of course it's not accepted. I mean, how many Mishnayos do we know that are predicated on drashas, that are based on drashas? And in fact, that it's a drasha, in some afurshin the pasuk, the chsaftim means that you should write it. That's a simple translation. I mean, if you look at Rashi al Torah, it doesn't say this drasha chsaftim ksivatama. That's for one. And number two, I will tell you that the chsaftim ksivatama is actually an interesting quote, which you have to be mindful of, because many times this application of ksivatama is not going to be something which invalidates something with b'di'evit, but rather something which is l'chatchila. And a great example of this would be the halacha in Ar Chaim, where the in Siman Lamed Vav, which is the headquarters for the Chofetz Chaim's Mishnah Sofrim, where he compiled a pamphlet on the kuntres on the oisius. It says over there l'chatchila yichtav ksiva tama. No, ksiva gasa, shenemach saftim ksiva tama, But b'dieved, it's not ma'akev. Clearly, we have a statement of Ksiva Tama, which is an optimal, a desirable requisite, but it's not something which is mandated and would invalidate the mitzvah if not performed. So, again, it's just interesting to point out that the Gemara doesn't accept this as a valid explanation of Felix Saver Ma'akfun. And just to open up the sugya of Isis, something which we're not going to see much of in these in the ensuing blatter of Stam. It's a very obscure sugya from the point of the Gemara and the Paiskim. But it was obvious that Chazal and Klal Yisrael, the Seifrim, Rabbanim, and Hamoin probably also had an accepted Messiah, had accepted tradition on as to exactly what the Osius looked like. Notwithstanding, there is a Gemara, a very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin, where there's Machlekes actually, what if the Osius that we have today are the actual Osius which were written on the Luchos? Again, it's very complicated, that Gemara in itself. And if there are any halachic ramifications of that, it's an agoda, it's a piece of agoda. And of course, today we know that we conform to a very, very exact guideline of what they are. There are differences between Ksav Sfaradi and Ksav Ashkenazi. But it's obvious that there was an accepted halacha of Isis, which we will not find anywhere in Shas, explicit. We will find some references, again, without getting into detail. But if you pay attention, they're more very, very indirect. They're not said as do this, do that. If you don't do this, it's puzzle. It's just an interesting to point out that the basis of the Torah Shebichsav, which is written down, is actually the Osius, and as the Gemara Shabbos says, it was a Ma'ase Benachri Echad Shebalo Fnei Shammai, and he said to him, how many Torahs do you have? He said we have two Torahs. He says Shebichsav, Torah Shebapeh. So he said, you know, I accept the one which is written Shebapeh. I mean, there's no you have no. It's not credible by me. I don't want to accept that. Gairani al Manash Tanam Dani Tarish Bechsav. So he came from a Shammai, so we know that the Shammai sent him packing, and he came to in front of Hillel, and he said, sure, no problem. He made him into a Gerli, Mar says, and he came back and he started teaching him Aleph Beis, Gimel Dalet, and then came the next day and he told him the opposite. He said, this is Dalet Gimel Aleph Beis. He said, well, one second. Yesterday you told me, when you switch it, he says, oh, so one second. He says, you're going to be Samech on me on the Ksav. You have to be Samech on me al Dal Peh, which is, again, we just, there's obviously this component of Torah Shebal Peh. There's a Masorah even to the very, very essence of Torah Shebichsav. But that said, there definitely was a kepeda. There was an insistence not to write it down until we find many, many years later the three svarim, the three sifra yisoid on Stam, which is the tikkun tefillin, the baruch shem and alfa beisa from the rishonim, came along out of different than Rabbeinu HaKadosh, where he foresaw what was going to happen in Eis Lasas Lashem. He wrote down the Mishnah, but they came sort of after the fact. We were compelled by the situation, which was seemed to have gotten out of hand. Again, we're not going to go into all the details about what and when, but they felt compelled to write down the story of the Isis, and that is actually where we have a formal Girs of Mishnah in the Isis themselves.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-4-HALACHA. 1-888-485 VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.